Hi, and welcome to another podcast from the Security Channel at Network Computing. I'm Curtis Franklin, Senior Technology Editor at Network Computing, and I'm glad you're here. A lot of stuff going on in the world of computing these days. Major new announcements of vulnerability, a new version of the SANS list. Might be able to podcast that in another day or so. And on the front here, just more going than we can shake a stick at. Spent a couple of days last week up in Chicago meeting and planning for the coming year. One great thing was I got to see a baseball game, first pro game I've seen in a long time, Red Sox versus White Sox. And since I used to live in Boston a long, long time ago, I'll have to say that the right team won. Got to admit, though, on dollar hot dog night in a park when the breeze is beginning to blow in the evening, just about anybody can win, and it's a pretty good game. Well, in this podcast, I've got a really nice interview for you. I had a chance to sit down on the phone and talk with Dr. Hugh Thompson. Now, Dr. Thompson is Chief Security Strategist for Security Innovation. And as such, he consults to just a whole lot of companies on how to improve their security. A lot of that's done, in his eyes, by building security into products. He's big on that. And in our conversation, we talked a lot about that. You know, what's broadly wrong with the products that we're building today? And what sorts of things can we do to make it better? Now, Hugh is a prolific kind of guy when it comes to writing and speaking about this stuff. His latest book is called The Software Vulnerability Guide. And he's got another one out called How to Break Software Security, Effective Techniques for Security Testing. Lots of journal and magazine articles, as well as consulting to a lot of companies that you've heard about and a few government agencies that you're not supposed to have heard about. Well, I will be back at the end of the interview to wrap things up. But let's let you get right on into it. It's a good one. Here we go, interview with Hugh Thompson on security. Let's start out with the basic question. Are applications irretrievably broken from a security standpoint?
So that's an interesting question. I mean, we've seen over the past 3 or 4 years that attack trends have moved from typical network probing sorts of things, the things where we just sort of download a tool and run, to real targeted attacks at the application layer. And many of those attacks have been very successful and very public. So that certainly tells us that we do have a problem. And a lot of the vendors acknowledge that we have a pretty serious problem as well. Now, in terms of them being sort of hopelessly broken, there is a lot of hope. But the hope really comes in addressing security throughout the life cycle. So security isn't this thing that we can just kind of magically bolt on to the end or sprinkle some super crypto fairy dust over and it'll go away. It's something that really needs to be solved in a systemic way. And that includes, you know, during design and requirements, during development, and during testing.
So from the very broadest standpoint, what are we doing wrong? I mean, what's basically wrong with the way that all of our application developers have been taught to create software over the past 40 years that the situation ends up so bad today?
See, you hit on an interesting point. And it's, you know, how are we taught to build software? Well, if you look at the curriculums at most universities for a degree in computer science or a degree in software engineering, you'll see lots of courses on, you know, database design and abstract analysis of algorithm classes, but you see very little on security. Up till probably 4 or 5 years ago, you were hard pressed to find a class on security. Chances are, you know, there'd be an elective on cryptography, but nothing that would help developers make more secure code. And if you look at the software engineering classes, they teach you to build code that has good performance, is maintainable, is reliable, and it, again, is kind of self-documenting, which goes back to maintainable. And in the last few years, it's code that's usable. Now, all of those goals of software, which are good goals, run counter to security in many cases, right? So we can have a highly usable system, but highly usable means we don't have to ever log on or supply our credentials. Now, security and usability are often at odds. They're kind of endpoints on a continuum. And developers aren't educated about the other end of that continuum, so they never know where to draw the line. So I think the big problem is awareness in the security space, and this is for developers and testers. We've seen that developers, once they're made aware that this particular coding construct is dangerous, and here's why it's dangerous, and let me show you an example of how this can be exploited, then they become much more conscious of the code they write. And building more secure software is really about a behavior change that comes from that awareness.
You mentioned a behavior change. One of the things, and you also mentioned, and I remember from my own time taking various classes in a computer science curriculum, you are taught performance issues. You're taught to some extent reliability issues, but of course, a long time ago when I was taking the classes, security never entered into it. Lately, we seem to have gotten the thought that security, performance, and usability are all in opposition to one another. Is security necessarily in opposition to both usability and performance when it comes to designing and coding applications?
Well, you know, it's very contextual, but there are many cases where, yeah, actually they are in direct opposition. Think about doing an extra security check for data every time it's parsed or received. Right? Those are extra instructions that your application has to execute. And obviously extra instructions are the kind of the bane of performance. And from a usability standpoint, there are areas that, for security reasons, we may want a user to re-authenticate multiple times during a transaction, for example, to protect against some man-in-the-middle attack or some hijacking attack. And while this certainly increases our security, it's not psychologically acceptable to users. So we've got to find that balance. Another interesting aspect of that as well is the code itself that we produce. Now, there's many choices that developers can make when they're implementing a function. Some of these are inherently insecure, and some of them are more secure. And those, are just language construct choices. And in that case, we don't have that trade-off, right? It's just making more intelligent and informed decisions about the code that we write.
Okay. Well, it's one thing to talk about the code that we write, but how about the code that we have to build on? A lot of the vulnerabilities that we see are things that exist within the operating system or within even a language construct like Java, like XML, like SOAP. how do we as developers work around other people's vulnerabilities?
Right, so that's an excellent point. I mean, we've got, if you think about building a software system, you've got a lot of sort of shaky bricks that you've got to build on, right? We've got to build on the operating system. We've also got to build on third-party products or components. And then you ask the question, well, how can I minimize my risk? And the answer is, we need to start making more informed decisions during procurement and during acquisition and during design. So, for example, how do we decide what platform to build on? Well, often that decision comes down to things that we understand clearly, like what's the cost going to be to us, how compatible is it with other systems, how easy is it for us to write the code on top of this platform, and all of those are important critical decision points. But what we need to understand how to measure as an industry is what security baggage am I getting along with this operating system or this platform or this component. So we need a way to measure that security before purchase time. Now, security measurement is a very interesting and difficult problem. But one of the things that you can do is start asking your vendors the tough questions about security. Things like, how many vulnerabilities were reported in your product over the last year? What improvements have you made to your own development lifecycle to make sure that known vulnerabilities that were in the previous version of your system aren't in the next version? What training do you provide for developers and testers to educate them on security? How many testers do you have that are focused exclusively on security? And what's your vulnerability response process? Again, the answers to these won't give you complete and utter knowledge about security because it's a very, again, very difficult thing to measure. But it will allow you to compare vendors and compare products in a meaningful way, where meaningful means it maps to your cost of security pain later down the road.
Okay. One of the things that you mentioned in that answer was the importance of asking the question, how many vulnerabilities have been reported in your products over the last, say, year? There are now several initiatives out there that seek to compensate security researchers for discovering vulnerabilities with the idea that these would then be spread more quickly back into the vendor community and to the user community to let them know what to be aware of. Do you think that this idea of putting a bounty on vulnerabilities is something that can improve security overall?
So it's interesting. I mean, there's always been incentive for people to find vulnerabilities, and it's come from two major sources. One is kind of the user and research community that have run into these issues themselves, or are actively looking to find them to provide value to their customers, meaning to protect their customers against a potential threat. Now, there are several ways that people can go and report those vulnerabilities. One is through a method called responsible disclosure, and this is something that Microsoft advocates, and actually many of the open source packaged distributors advocate as well, like Red Hat. And in that case, you have, you know, vulnerabilities that are discovered and then sent to those vendors and are not disclosed elsewhere, meaning not, you know, they don't show up on a mailing list somewhere. And then those vulnerabilities are fixed by the vendor, and the vendor issues a patch at the same time they announce that vulnerability. Where the big problem comes in for users are where researchers or users that have run into security vulnerabilities decide instead to expose those vulnerabilities publicly. And there's various motivations for that. You know, one is publicity. Another is not knowing what the right escalation channel is for that vulnerability. And then again, that increases customer risk. Now, from the bounty perspective, on kind of the underground world of security, there's always been motivation to find these sorts of things and either use them or abuse them to get into individual systems, or to find them and then publicly disclose them. So these things have almost become their own sort of underground currency that devalue very, very quickly, right? Because the first time they're used in trade for something, their value goes down immensely because of the risk of exposure or the risk of it getting fixed. Companies like iDefense have put up their kind of reward program for these sorts of things, for these things called zero-day vulnerabilities.
Right.
And from the consumer protection perspective, I mean, it's certainly valuable to get these things escalated through the right channels instead of being used in some sort of underground way to exploit systems.
Well, as I look at the overall security landscape, on the one hand, it does seem like the awareness of security issues is being raised in the developer community, whether it's developers for infrastructure and operating system and foundation products, or developers out on the end user organization side. On the other hand, it seems like, especially with some of the organized crime background that our latest generation of attackers seems to have, that the bad guys are getting better at what they do as well. So my question to you is, as you look at the total security landscape right now, are things getting better or worse?
So things are certainly, awareness is certainly increasing in the development community, which can't be anything but good. In the same token, the sort of price of entry for the bad guy from a technical knowledge standpoint is actually decreasing. Before it was, you know, if somebody wanted to write a buffer overflow exploit, then they'd have to have pretty fair knowledge of assembly and architecture and how components work together. Nowadays, in that sort of underground community, a host of tools have been written to elevate the skills of the so-called script kiddie class of attackers. So that makes it more concerning for individual companies. So instead of just having to worry about a vulnerability in a big dependency like your operating system, now you've got to ask the question, is the code that I write more secure? And we're certainly seeing movements in the software user community, meaning companies that have to write their own applications, web applications, for example, who are becoming more aware of the security threat and are training their people and improving their processes on security. So it's hard to say if things are getting better or worse, but the quality, at least the security quality of code, is improving because people are starting to understand the consequences. I mean, look at things like California Senate Bill 1386, the law that forces companies to now disclose if they believe that user data has been viewed or compromised. And originally, you know, it applies to people that are legal California residents, but it applies whether you know or not. So essentially, you have to inform everyone if you suspect that their data has been discovered. So for many companies, this has been a huge sea change in the way they do things, because now an incident that may have been dealt with internally in the past now has to be laundered in a very public way, and that's why we see every week on the front page of the newspaper some other breach at a corporation. So people are understanding what the consequences are, and the consequences to them in many cases are negative publicity, which in high trust industries like finance are just unacceptable.
You know, you mentioned the public awareness of these breaches. The conference board in the last month has done a survey that queries consumers on their attitudes and behaviors about online security. And it showed a couple of interesting things. One is that a lot of people are in fact concerned, especially about identity theft issues. And the other is that they're beginning to alter their behavior in response to that concern. And the alteration is typically to do less online commerce. Are there concrete steps that you think we can make as an industry to reassure consumers? Are there steps that we're going to have to take quite aside from what the government mandates in order to convince people that it's safe to do business online?
So customer confidence is a very fragile thing, especially when we're thinking about exposing your credentials or your credit card number to the general to the internet, right? Because for many consumers that buy things over the internet, it's still a magical process, right? And if the plumbing of that magic starts to be questioned, then it has some really concerning implications for the information-driven economy. So what can we do to convince users? Well, I don't know. It's tough, right? Because bad things like breaches make the news, and this is kind of the snapshot that consumers get, right? They see credit cards being stolen. They see data being exposed at various locations, but the positive efforts that the community and the companies are making to improve security doesn't get that same sort of traction in the media. So are there steps that we can take to improve security? Certainly. How do those steps get then translated back into something that gives customers more confidence? That I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. This has been a great conversation, but I have just a couple more questions that I'd like to ask.
Sure.
First, when you were talking about changes companies need to make in the way they develop software, in order to make it more secure, changes to the process and to their ways of thinking. Are there, say, 4 or 5 things that virtually every company that develops software should look at making sure their process addresses?
So that's a great question. And yeah, there are. There are sort of these kind of must-haves to improve security. And one of them is threat modeling. Now, threat modeling is the process of turning kind of this nebulous cloud of bad things that may happen to our system or our software into concrete objectives that I can code against and test against. So, for example, I may be developing an e-commerce site, and the threat modeling process is essentially one where you bring in people from different areas of development, right? So you have somebody who's a developer, somebody a tester, somebody that might be a support engineer, and together they come up with abuse scenarios. And that's one of the biggest problems in software development, is we tend to think in terms of use cases, like how this system is going to be used, but not how could this system be abused. And an attacker sees a system in a very different way than a user. Whenever they see a web form, they see an opportunity, an opportunity to get into your system. They don't see it as an enabling thing for the customer. So threat modeling is one, and threat modeling helps your organization think like a bad guy and protect against those bad things an attacker may do. The second is definitely security awareness for developers and testers. One of the biggest problems with security vulnerabilities is that they tend to manifest outside of normal requirements. Security bugs tend to be extra things that the application does that might not violate specifications. So one of the things that you can get sort of the biggest return on investment for the quickest is training your developers on here's a good secure coding practice. If you're writing code in C or C++, here's what you should do. Here's the constructs you should avoid. Here's the ones that you should use, and here's what they give you. And the same sort of training is very valuable from a testing perspective as well. The next sort of thing is to think about where security fits in each stage of the life cycle. Right? When you're gathering requirements, for example, don't just ask, well, what do our customers need from a functionality standpoint? Ask, what do we need to defend our customers against? So it's not just these positive requirements again, but it's these negative requirements as well. How are we going to constrain our software? And if we think about that throughout the dev cycle, then kind of this training and threat modeling processes fall into place.
Okay. I guess the last question, we tend to think or like to think in terms of battles and wars, things with a knowable beginning and a goal and an end. And people have talked about things like winning the war against hackers. For what we face in computer and IT security, is that the wrong landscape to picture ourselves in? Is there a win, or is this just the way things are?
Right. So you bring up a great point, which is, you know, in computer security, it's not about getting to a destination, right? Security is definitely not a destination. It is a constant journey. And the big thing there is that the threat landscape is changing, and it constantly changes as we use new technologies and adopt new services and new models. We create new risks for ourselves. So instead of thinking about it as a battle that we can declare victory on at a point in time, it's best to think of it as risk mitigation, right? There are certain risks that you can never completely protect yourselves against, but there are happy boundaries, happy mediums, right? A place where you can say, okay, for the amount that I'm willing to spend to shore up my defenses, this is the security that I have. And one of the biggest challenges in the security industry has been the ability to measure that, and give that kind of flashlight to where are we in terms of security. So again, it's a constant process that one has to go through, and the sort of end goal is that your risk level is commensurate with the data and assets that you're trying to protect.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly enjoyed talking with him, and frankly, I look forward to having a chance to talk with him again. I think there are several more great conversations to be had with Hugh. Before I do that, though, there are a lot of other folks I'm going to be talking to over the course of the next couple of weeks. I've got probably half a dozen good interviews lined up that I'll be sharing with you in podcasts over the coming weeks. I really appreciate you taking the time to listen. If you enjoyed it, if you didn't, if you have any suggestions about what you'd like to hear, please drop me an email. You can send that to cfranklin@nwc.com. Until next time, thanks for taking a few minutes to spend with us. This is Curtis Franklin for Network Computing.